Thank you for letting us share today. I'm a way better singer than I am a teacher, so please forgive me. So I'm going to go ahead and read the scripture for today, which comes from Micah 6, 6th chapter, the 1st through the 8th verse. The 1st through the 7th verse. And I'm reading from the NIV version. Listen to what the Lord says. Stand up, plead my case before the mountains. Let the hills hear what you have to say. Hear, you mountains, the Lord's accusations. Listen, you everlasting foundations of the earth. For the Lord has a case against his people. He is lodging a charge against Israel. My people, what have I done to you? How have I burdened you? Answer me. I brought you up out of Egypt and redeemed you from the land of slavery. I sent Moses to lead you, also Aaron and Miriam. My people, remember what Balak, king of Moab, plotted when the Balaam, son of Beor, answered? Remember your journey from Shittim to Gilgal, that you may know the righteous acts of the Lord. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with a calf a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with the thousands of rams and 10,000s of rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgressions, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Well, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. So today, Steve and I were trying to come up with a title for our talk today. And we decided to go with something that is based upon what is happening in our time today and now. As you know, if those of you who watched this past week or these past couple of weeks, we have watched the impeachment of Trump. And this past week, we watched that impeachment case travel from Congress to the Senate. And in the Senate, we watched where something that resembled a trial, I don't know if I should use that word, but we watched a trial take place and listened to the Congress plead their case to the Senate, and we listened to the questions that the Senate had to ask about the impeachment of Trump. We don't yet have the final result. This is really not a political sermon in the sense that we know it. It is political from an ancient time. So we decided to name our talk, The Impeachment of God's People. What we learned in Micah 6 is that God has a case against the people of Judah in ancient times. And we're going to listen to this case. What's so interesting about the chapter of Micah 6 is it is set in a legal setting. The terms that are used are things that we would recognize in a courtroom. In our cast in this particular story are Yahweh, Micah, the people of Judah, the mountains and the hills, and each of them has a specific role in this story. Now, the messenger is Micah, who is speaking. He's delivering the Lord's message. Yahweh is the defendant. He's the one that is, he's the accused one. Yahweh is the accused one, the one who allegedly injured the plaintiff. And the plaintiff in this story are the people of Judah who claim that they have been injured. So this chapter starts out in verse 1. Listen to what the Lord says. Stand up, plead my case before the mountains. Let the hills hear what you have to say. So this begins where Yahweh invites the people of Judah to address their complaints to the mountains and the hills. And I think I left out one of our characters. The jury in this case is the mountain and the hills. And specifically, they're our jury because they have been in existence beyond the reach of our memory, beyond the reach of our traditions. The commentary that I read used the word immemorial, which means extending or existing beyond the reach of memory, record, or tradition. It's interesting to wrap my head around that word. That's how far back Yahweh goes. And so Yahweh has said, this is your jury, the mountains and the hills. So Yahweh invites the mountains and the foundations of the earth to serve as the jury to determine who has broken the covenant relationship that has existed for centuries between Yahweh and Israel. And from the bottoms of the oceans to the top of the mountains, God's creation has been the witness to this relationship between Yahweh and the people of Judah. So they're very well suited to reach a just verdict in this particular case. In Micah 6, 2 through 3, it says, "Hear, you mountains, the Lord's accusation. Listen, you everlasting foundations of the earth, for the Lord has a case against his people, lodging a charge against Israel." Yahweh has called Micah to speak on his behalf. He has a controversy with Israel. Yahweh sees the people of Judah have broken this covenant, this special relationship between Yahweh and the people. And even though the covenant relationship has been damaged by the unfaithfulness of the people of Judah, the covenant relationship still stands. It's just damaged. So Yahweh gives evidence in his favor in Micah 6, 4. He says, "I brought you up out of Egypt and redeemed you from the land of slavery. I sent Moses to lead you, Aaron and Miriam." Yahweh sent not only Aaron and Miriam, but he sent many, many people to lead them through this particular time, to take them out of their circumstances and lead them to the land of good and plenty. Yahweh delivered them from the land of bondage, which would have been in Egypt, to the promised land. They went into Egypt as a conquered people. But when they emerged from Egypt, they became a nation. This was exhibit one in Yahweh's case against the people of Judah. In Micah 6, 5, we have exhibit two. He says, "I brought you up out of Egypt and redeemed you from slavery." Oh, I apologize. That was exhibit two I read. Exhibit one, I skipped it, so I'm going to go back. In exhibit one, Yahweh parted the waters so that the Israelites could pass through the Red Sea. and escape the pursuing soldiers. Yahweh gave them drink. He gave them manna while they were in the wilderness and took care of them. These are the stories that most Jewish students learn, that we learn as young Christians learning about our faith. And there are so many stories of things that Yahweh did to provide for his people and to take care of them and to nurture and keep that covenant relationship with the people of Judah. So I went on to Exhibit 2, which was he sent Moses and Aaron and Miriam. And then in Exhibit 3, if you go to Micah 6:5, Yahweh brings a couple of episodes during their time in the wilderness to their attention so that they'll remember what he did for them. The first is, "My people remember Balak, king of Moab. He plotted, and what Balaam, son of Beor, answered. Balak, king of Moab, was afraid of the Israelites. So he summoned Balaam to pronounce a curse on Israel. For I know that whomever you bless is blessed, and whomever you curse is cursed." This is from Numbers 22:6. But the Lord intervened with that particular curse so that Balaam blessed the Israelites instead of cursing them. And that can be found in Numbers 23:24. This is a very complex story, and it's a very complex time. There are different kings that come in and out of rule, some which are good, some which are not so good. And this was one of the kings that had cause against Israel. But Yahweh, because of the covenant relationship, took care of the people of Judah. So in Micah 6:6-7, we read, "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old?" At this point, they're asking, well, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to sacrifice ourselves, our children? Are we supposed to give you burnt offerings? There were many different types of offerings that were given in that particular time, even amounting to human sacrifice. There were all kinds of rules created in the name of God that were also applied to the people of this time. And this is where in Micah 6:8, he tells them, look, I don't require all of that. In 6:8, Yahweh says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." So when he says to act justly, it's to act with righteousness, to be honest and impartial, fair treatment in court, in all courts for people, to love mercy. It means a variety of things, to show kindness, loving kindness, mercy, goodness, faithfulness, and love, and to walk humbly with your God. When we walk, it's not a boastful walk or a walk of pride or a walk that says that we're better or different than others. It's a walk that is humbly, truly humble. We rely on God to help us, to shape us, to be our shield. That particular verse, or portion of the verse, to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God, has often been used as a backdrop for are causes of justice. And we cling to that verse because it gives us hope in and instructs us how we should be to one another in our world. I've given you a very, very brief, very limited summary of what happened with the ancient people of Judah and the case that God had against them. And I've shown you the jury. I think it's interesting to name this the impeachment of the people of Judah. So I'm not going to say whether or not they were impeached. I will leave it to you to determine that. You will be Congress and Senate all rolled up into one today. That's not my job. But I want to hand it up to Steve. He's going to drill down a little deeper into that relationship of who we are in present day and how this verse, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God, how that particular verse will magnify who we should be today in today's context.
So, welcome to Black History Month. Black history. Or as our anti-racism group likes to say, history. White supremacists like to think black history began with slavery. This history is the forgotten, ignored, stolen, forbidden history. This true history is removed from schools and textbooks to make way for propaganda. And the propaganda has said that black people are sexual perverts and thieves. The only thing they're good for is entertaining. They're lazy, although we built the backbone of the development of American economic superpower on the backs of enslaved Africans. In order to bring this to my awareness, to my conscience, I've done some work I'd like to share. And it speaks from this passage about walking humbly. What I've done is examine my everyday thinking to unwind the white supremacy from my paradigm. We all have it, whether we're from Europe or Africa, whether you came over in this generation or many generations ago. My process is to take time throughout the day to review and examine the meaning of my running tally of thoughts, decisions, and conclusions. Each day, our minds are at work parsing out what we mean in the world and making rough, simple decisions on how to proceed, what to say. I take a little time here and there. I slow down and there, here and there, and looking for the racism in my thinking because it's entwined with every aspect of society. It's been our lack of personal consciousness that has led to racism continuing through the centuries. We don't even know it's there. I'll give you a simple example. As I was listening to a Woody Guthrie song covered by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, I want to share a little bit of you of the song. It's not your typical Woody Guthrie version. So Sharon Jones obviously modified the song, and she modified some of the words. You might look it up on the internet and She has some interesting interpretations of the words, and of course the music's a little bit different than Woody would have done. All right, can you hear me okay? It's hard to tell from up here. And I grew up with Woody Guthrie on the stereo. I love Woody Guthrie. He's a hero of mine growing up. He did amazing things in this country. But Woody Guthrie was an unconscious white supremacist in his thinking. We all have white supremacist thinking. He probably didn't imagine what it'd be like to hear that song as a Native American. This land is my land. You know, taking somebody's land and then saying it's my land, it's your land, it's the land of all of us. But really, when you think about it, there's that slant in it. You may not agree with my interpretation, but you kind of get the gist that we can re-examine each little aspect of how we grew up, the thoughts we had. And I want to emphasize, unconscious white supremacists. It's the thinking that's embedded that we don't even realize. I still love him. I still think he's a great man. But he had that unconscious bias. The ownership of the land, of course, was a major dispute of the centuries. For him to sing "This land is my land" doesn't account for the painful memory of Native peoples. I understand his intent. I understand he was a good man, but this is a simple example to help us examine the perpetuation of white supremacy in the lives of our everyday. Maybe you don't agree with my assessment. The idea remains true. We have a blind spot in our Jihari window that is full of white supremacy thinking. And if you're not familiar with the Jihari window, it's the traditional four-pane window. The one pane represents what I'm aware of and what everyone else is aware of. Then there's a pane that's I'm not aware of, but everyone else is aware of. I'm aware of, but nobody else is aware of my secrets. And the fourth is unawareness, lack of awareness. That's my interpretation, and it works for what I'm trying to say. I may be a little out of interpretation of that process, but the idea is we want to become more conscious of our thoughts, of our actions. Doesn't matter what our intent is, we have to really dig down into our personal awareness. And one of the things I've learned in some of the anti-racism work is microaggressions. And, you know, that's one of those things where I might not be aware of how I impact someone else, but that doesn't matter. If it hurts them, that's the first concern. And we have to rectify that. So part of our mission is to uncover these hidden aspects of our makeup. I use this awareness technique, slowing down my thoughts, breaking it into parts, and why did I come to that conclusion? I use that technique as a self-examination process. It's an attempt to become more aware of those parts of the Jihari window that we normally are not conscious of. The phrase in the anti-racism movement is awake. Are you woke? You know, that's what we talk about. Are you aware? Are you out of that unconscious space and more present in the pain where you're aware and others are aware? Of course, our personal state and your personal state only gives us something to work with. The system of racism still exists. The system needs to change, like we hear about in Micah. The system has been in place for centuries. It's not time to be patient. That's been one of the ploys of white supremacy, to slow down and stop the change as if black people can afford to wait, or other oppressed people. We have to take up the mantle for our melanated brothers and sisters. White people created an oppressive system like the people of Judah. We sacrificed our slaves to get economic redemption. We lost sight of humanity and created a great cover-up in our system of propaganda. I'll share another example. I know a black Hispanic man. He calls himself Hispanic or Latinx, denies his African roots. He has all the physical characteristics of African, dark skin, etc. Particularly dark skin, not, you know, there's a range of colors. So he's he acknowledges his Hispanic nature, but not his African nature. But of course, if the police see him walking down the street, they see a black man. Doesn't matter what he identifies with, doesn't matter whether it's on his passport or his motor vehicle driver's license, they see a black man. So a dark-skinned Latinx or a dark-skinned Thai person experiences much more trauma from our police. So the policeman is more likely to harass, shoot, and kill the darker-skinned person over the white person. Over and over again in the news, we hear the results of this police violence. So, to wrap it up, how do I bear this heavy burden that I talk about all the time? For decades, I felt a burden of guilt and shame. It's been through working with anti-racism groups that I feel some relief. We still have a system to cope with, but awareness of the brings the opportunity for change. The change brings with it conscious relief. We all seek that kind of relief. I would say the two most ignored problems in American society are the plight of descendants of African slaves and the Native Americans. Our movement toward justice and equity in our lives will help.
So in conclusion, we've looked at the history of the people of Judah and their faithlessness to the covenant with Yahweh to inform us their faithlessness to the covenant with Yahweh. And we've looked a little bit at racism and at our plight today, what would be our faithlessness to a covenant with Yahweh. Now, I should tell you that God's covenant with the people of Judea, or God told the Israelites, now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This particular covenant was made back in Exodus 19, 5 through 6. This is the bad news for the people of Judea. If you will not listen to me and carry out all these commands, and if you reject my decrees and abhor my laws and fail to carry out all my commands and so violate my covenant, I will bring upon you sudden terror, wasting disease, and fever that will destroy your sight and drain away your life. You will plant seeds in vain because your enemies will eat it. I will set my face against you so that you will be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you will rule over you, and you will flee even when no one is pursuing you. If after all this you will not listen to me, I will punish you for your sins seven times over. Pretty harsh. Leviticus 26, very harsh. So most covenants include and define the duties that are expected of the people of God. And I'm not going to get into the particulars of it. But what I want to talk about is how they failed God. They just failed God because they did not keep the covenant of God. They refused to walk in God's law. They forgot God's works and the wonders that he had shown them. In Deuteronomy, it says, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they would fear me and always keep my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." When I read that, I thought to myself, what would God say to us today about keeping his covenant? I think God would say, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they would fear me instead of Trump, that they would fear me instead of loss of power, that they would fear me instead of all the institutions that have been set up to, such as white privilege, anything that makes us more powerful, that raises a group of people up and at the expense of another group of people. There is good news, and unfortunately, forgive me, I cut off the last part of my the good news. But I believe the good news that I had is in John, 13. I don't remember the scriptural reference, but I will tell you. God has given us a new covenant, a new commandment. He says, "Behold, I've given you a new command to love one another." That covers everything, and that is what God has asked us to do today. What God has said is all those things are of the past. They are old. What has taken place today is through the sacrifice of God's Son for all the sins that we have borne in ancient times and even today and in the future. God is there for us. He has not broken his special covenant with us, his people. But what he has done is he has said that we must love one another, and that is above all else. So I know I read all of that condemnation. I don't want you to leave with that in your head. I do believe that love does conquer all. It's not just a saying. And yes, we have watched an impeachment, and we've watched the Senate and watched a trial. But I'm looking at the people, us. I don't believe that God impeached us. I personally believe that God has forgiven us, because that is much more important. If we accept God's commandment for today to love one another, then we are acting as a people that he has that special covenant with us. And we are walking into our inheritance as children of God. If we don't accept that covenant, then yes, our thoughts have been impeached. Impeachment is not final, though. There is a life beyond that of forgiveness. So I want to thank you for listening to our humble talk today. Forgive me for all the history that I hacked up, but we love you, and we are grateful to be able to share.